The advice and recommendations in this program are for general educational purposes and not a diagnosis. You should consult a physician or health professional directly before beginning or changing any course of health treatment. You're listening to Dr. Barry Dworkin on Sunday House Call.
And just a reminder, in 1/2 hour from now, we'll be taking your calls at 1-800-580-2372, 1-800-580-2372. Encourage you, as always, to call a bit early. If you have any questions, comments about what you've heard on the show, things you'd like to hear on the show for future, in the future, I'd like to hear from you. Our email, you can reach us at the sundayhousecall.com website and send emails to us if you want to ask a question that way. And as well, I do offer a bit of a service to people who are writing a particular question or who are on the line and asking a question and want to know a bit more information that we may not be able to completely cover on the radio because of the scope of the question and the length of the answer. And I can send you well-researched information about the topic that you'd like to know about so that you can look at that at your leisure and get sort of the most current and up-to-date information about that. So once again, our phone number 1-800-580-2372 or our website at sundayhousecall.com. On August 14th, the Canadian Institute for Health Information released a report entitled Patient Safety in Canada, a new analysis that provides an overview of patient safety issues in Canada and measures the frequency of adverse events in healthcare delivery, including new data on birth and obstetrical traumas, pulmonary embolisms in hospital patients, and the latest survey information on medical errors, just to name a few of the areas. And joining us once again on the show, I'm pleased to introduce and welcome Jennifer Zellmer, Vice President of Research and Analysis at the Canadian Institute for Health Information. Good afternoon.
Hello.
How are you doing?
I'm well. How are you?
I'm very well, thanks. Good to have you back on the show.
Thank you.
I'd like to ask you first off, as always, where the data came from, what you used as your data sources for this report.
Sure. We actually used a combination of data sources for this report. Some of the information came from surveys of Canadians, questions that asked, for example, adults with health problems if they'd had a wrong medication or wrong dose in the last 2 years. Some of the information came from data reported directly by hospitals about the different types of events that patients experience while in hospital.
Mm-hmm.
And then some of it came from specific studies, so things like adverse blood transfusion events, those kind of things were focus studies.
What were some of the pertinent findings and how did you categorize them? Because this is a pretty large report, and so the media sort of picked out different areas that they may have found to be interesting. But how did you organize it? What were the specific categories? And then did you do sort of subcategories in there?
Sure. So what we were really trying to understand was getting beneath the surface a little bit in terms of patient safety. How often different kinds of events happen? Because if you don't know what's happening, it's really hard to tell whether you're making a difference in making improvements, for mm-hmm. example. And so we looked at events that happened both in hospital and outside and tried to get a sense of what were some of the more common types that we were looking at as well as some of the more rare.
And what were those?
So at the more common end, adults with health problems reporting wrong medication or wrong dose in the past 2 years, that happened to about 1 in 10 people with health problems.
Mm-hmm.
Similarly, about 1 in 10 adults who were admitted to an acute care hospital contracted an infection during their stay. So those were at the more common end. At the less common end, things like foreign objects, sponges, or instruments left in after a surgical procedure, 1 in 3,000 cases, and adverse blood transfusion events, even more rare.
It's interesting, you know, when you mention the foreign objects and it raises this whole, it's almost a voyeuristic thing when you listen to the media. It's like this leads off in some of them of objects left in a person, and yet again comparing the risk, 1 in 10 for infections, 1 in 10 for medication errors, and yet what seems to be more enticing is somehow that there was an object left in somebody. And so do you find that when you produce these reports from a personal perspective, when you produce these reports, do you find that the media tends to focus more on one area as opposed to looking at the entire package?
Well, it is tricky when there's lots of information, and it's always interesting to see what people do pick
yes.
up on. Not always what I personally would have predicted.
Right.
So it's always interesting.
Well, much has been made about, you know, the 1 in 10 risk of contracting an infection in hospital and the obstetrical complication risks and blood clots or pulmonary emboli that occur in people in hospital. What I'd like to know is if there's anything at how these rates compare to that, say, of 10, 20, or even 50 years ago. In order to provide some context about the scope of these changes, and the reason I ask that is that we have people who go to hospital that may have underlying chronic diseases, or who have diabetes, or high blood pressure, or who have renal failure, or other concomitant conditions that may contribute to their increased risk of contracting the infection. So my question is, were the types of patients and their underlying medical disorders, if they had any, considered when looking at these particular risk factors?
Sure. Well, certainly when we looked at some of the indicators, they were. So for instance, when we're looking at wrong medication, wrong dose, we're focusing on adults with health problems. So these tend to be people who have more complex medication regimes. They may be taking more than one medication. Their medications may change over time during the course of the year, for example.
Right.
For other types of things, like the foreign objects left in, we looked at all patients who had surgery.
And so were you able to stratify that group of people to say, well, you know, that what I'm trying to find out, I guess, is, does that 1 in 10 refer to the worst case scenario where somebody with the infection rate, where somebody had a pre-existing condition, whereas somebody who is relatively healthy without any significant past medical history, were they still susceptible to that 1 in 10 infection risk, or were they was their risk lower?
Sure. Well, the rate overall is 1 in 10, and this is
right.
Looking at infections that were contracted after you got to an acute care home. That said, there's absolutely no question that people with complex medical conditions, people who have multiple interventions, may be at higher risk for many of these types of events than others.
With regards to obstetrical complications, again, I'd like it if you could cover a bit of what you found with regards to what was included in obstetrical complications, and then also to look at whether there were also contributing factors. Were these completely normal deliveries, completely normal perinatal histories, or were there complications that were included in the data and that just it was not reported, media did not report that the stratification or at least the differences between the people that were in this particular data set?
Sure. Well, I think, and relevant to your point, it's important to point out that over 250,000 babies are born in Canadian hospitals each year, and most of those proceed very smoothly. I mean, most of those are fine. In terms of when we looked at birth trauma, these are injuries to the newborn, things like injuries to their scalp and nervous system, those kinds of questions. We found that occurred in about 1 in 141 births. There are, though, categories of births that are at higher risk. So if a mother has diabetes, obesity, a small pelvis, prolonged pregnancy, if the baby's in a different position, induced labor, some of those kinds of things are examples of risk factors for birth trauma.
And so these particular risk factors would potentially contribute, in fact, what you found in this report.
Yeah, certainly people with these kind of risk factors, you tend to have an increased risk of the baby having problems. Same thing on the mother's side, although the risk factors are a bit different. When we're looking at obstetrical trauma, there are certain types of mothers who tend to be more likely to have serious tears, for example,
right.
or injuries to their bladder than others.
Is there a way of finding out from the report and this particular data, those particular complications that could have been avoided? I know it's difficult to on the basis of maybe incomplete medical histories, but looking at the complication rates, which ones were as a result of trying to preserve or save the baby and mother from a complication during the birthing process, and those that could have been avoided because of more iatrogenic or physician-induced or deliverer-induced trauma to the mother or the infant?
Sure. Well, that's always the $100 million question,
right.
I guess, because nobody worldwide has managed to get rates of these types of events to zero at this point. That said, there is a lot of good research about things that you can do to reduce the risk for each of these types of events that we looked at. So the challenge is, of course, you know, how low can you go, really? And in some cases, our knowledge is changing as well. If you think about something, one of the more common types of nosocomial infections in hospitals is pneumonia. And a few years ago, you know, this was sort of considered to be, particularly if you were on a ventilator, this was an unexpected complication. Well, now we've got examples of hospitals, both in Canada and elsewhere, who've gone months or in some cases even years without having a single case. So our knowledge about how to prevent these types of events is also changing, and that changes what may be possible in terms of prevention.
Now, I do want to turn to the topic at the beginning was the foreign bodies left in people for surgery during surgery. But my question is a little different in that, were there specific patients that were more prone to this error? Was there again a specific type of surgery or a specific procedure or a patient a certain type of patient that where this error tended to occur more frequently?
Mm-hmm. Well, it tended to occur less frequently for children, possibly partly because of the types of surgical procedures that kids tend to have. So tonsillectomies, cleft palate surgery, those kind of things, maybe a different type of risk. Mm-hmm. In terms of higher risk, patients who were obese, who had emergency operations or unexpected changes in their operation in the course of the surgery, or a change in the nursing staff or surgical team during the procedure, mm-hmm. tend to be at higher risk.
What were also, in terms of medication errors, you mentioned, was it measuring hospital-based and community-based medication errors?
That's right, any kind, regardless of where it occurred.
And was there a difference between those two, you know, in inpatient or community-based? Was there a difference in the rate of errors?
Actually, based on the way that the survey was conducted, we can't really separate out the ones in hospital mm-hmm. and the ones in the community. And that's also partly a feature of medication problems in that it may be an interaction between medications, some of which you may have in a community basis,
right.
some of which in hospital.
Okay.
So what we looked at was the overall number.
And finally, how would you like to see this data used? You mentioned how nosocomial infections, respirator-induced infections, people in the ICU, for example, or on respirators who would end up having pneumonias where it was sort of expected are now less likely for that to occur because of measures taken to infection control measures that are taken. With this information, because again, the way I heard the reports and a lot of people hearing the reports is that it sort of blankets the system as these are what the risks are regardless of who you are. But as you so eloquently mentioned, that there are specific patients and groups where this will happen more and others where it may happen less. And that's the overall average is, for example, 1 in 10. It differs depending on the type of patient you are and what you have, the disease that you have. Mm-hmm. So with regards to that, how would you like to see this data used and how would you like to see it, and you mentioned this at the beginning, ideally reported to the public to get a broader understanding of the goals and measurements that you wanted to achieve within this report?
Well, I think certainly that context is very helpful, and really understanding not only the fact that different types of events, some are more common and some are less common, but also who's most likely to be affected and what are some of the strategies that have been shown to be effective at reducing the risk. We try and outline all three of those things in the actual report. So that's how we try and provide the fuller package, if you like.
Mm-hmm.
In terms of how we hope it will be used, well, one is just simply to inform people about that kind of information. But the second is also to have a baseline understanding of what the rates are like today. You asked me earlier, you know, how have they changed over time? In a lot of cases, we simply don't know
mm-hmm.
because this information wasn't collected 20 or 50 years
right.
ago. So we can start now and look on a go-forward basis to understand how we're changing.
Well, Ms. Zellmer, I'd like to thank you very much once again for joining us to talk about this particular report. And I'm sure I'm going to have you on the air again in another 6 months, and it's going to be another report, and I enjoy them, and I enjoy having you on the show.
A pleasure for me, too. Thanks so much.
All the best.
You, too.